brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm convocating every foul wicked spirit in the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, that Gorilla Bay on the Ooze. Right now.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, you're listening to the Ooze. This is Jason Sorrell with your host, TC Downey. We're having a little technical issue, but I don't know if it's been resolved yet. TC, how do I sound?
Much better, man. Much better. The call quality is crystal clear now.
Right on. All right. Well, the call-in number, I'm going to throw that out real quick, 347-989-1371. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is the end of the world predictions, not just what Harold Camping had been discussing, although a good portion of the show, I'm sure, will be dedicated to his recent predictions and how that fell through and what's going on with that, because it was a really big news story, and but also the general end-of-the-world vibe that seems to permeate Christianity and that way of thinking. And not to necessarily dog Christianity, but just that aspect of it, those folks who kind of pray for death. So I guess before we get into it, man, what's going on with you?
Shit, man, buzzing a little bit. Me and Nikki drank a bottle of wine and then killed a couple of little bottles of alcohol. And so, shit, I'm feeling good, man. I'm ready to talk about the end of the world.
I wanted to mention your blog real quick before we get into it. If you folks haven't checked out TC's new blog, Kali Prime, TC's doing a little bit of intellectual heavy lifting or philosophical heavy lifting in his blog. He's exploring and introducing some ideas that are kind of deep, and you know, focusing on self-development and a different kind of way of looking at or bringing together different perspectives regarding the cosmos and your position in it, and just a way of thinking of self and the universe. So definitely check that out. I want to say that the link to that is www.collieprime.blogger or blogspot.com. Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually .blogspot.com, yeah.
Right on. I don't have the page up right in front of me. I should have brought it up before I started talking about it. So definitely check that out. He's got a couple of posts up right now. That it's heavy, and it's introducing a way of thinking, I think, that as it develops will just get deeper and deeper. So definitely check those things out.
Well, thanks very much, man. I really kind of hadn't put that out there yet because I wanted to get a few more posts up and everything. But
oh, my bad.
No, that's fine. I mean, at this point, it's go time one way or the other. So, might as well. You know what I mean?
Right on. So, you were gonna say something?
Oh no, just rambling.
All right. Well, let's talk about the end of the world.
Right on.
On May 2011, a gentleman named Harold Camping predicted that the rapture would occur. Now, his prediction included that the rapture would occur, and then 5 months later, the world would end on October 21st. And he's basing his calculations on some mathematics. This guy basically came up with specific dates that things occurred in the Bible, specific biblical events. And it was based on some formula and a little bit of Bible coding, some different things going on. So he comes up with this date, May 21st, 2011, being the day of the rapture. Now, this isn't Mr. Camping's first outing as in this prediction business here. He originally predicted that the world would end May 21st, 1988. That didn't happen. Then he predicted September 7th, 1994, and that didn't happen. And, of course, as we all know, on May 21st, the rapture didn't occur the way he expected. The reason that Harold gets the attention or got the attention that he did this time around is that the guy has he's the founder and a radio host on the familyradio.org or Family Radio broadcast channel. They have a bunch of affiliates that are translated in different languages, and he gets heard all over the world, not only talking about the end of the world prophecies or whatever, but basically scripture and different interpretations and his kick on things. He pushes that his listeners to go ahead and get out of all their churches because he considers churches kind of anti-religion, apostate is what I think the term is. He wants everybody to study the Bible for themselves and listen to his radio show, and that's all they need to do as far as their faith. Now the guy ended up shelling out, or his organization ended up shelling out about $100 million. I was surprised when I saw this number, about $100 million on their 2011 campaign to let everybody know about the end of the world. And he said basically, and I quote here, when he was asked, it's like, hey, there's a whole bunch of people that donated money to this whole push because they believed you, they believed that the world was going to end and everything else. Are you going to get that money back? And he said, we're not at the end. Why would we return it? Okay. So I think he's saying, and basically that's saying to me that on October 21st, when the world doesn't end, because I'm expecting that it will not, he's going to be looking to shell some money out.
Right on.
But, and Camping isn't the first one to make some predictions or to make that statement. The Catholic Church, in the year 1000, while they're busy trying to convert the pagans because they expected the world to end in the year 1000, they went through this sort of end time situation as well. And when the church was approached by all these people who had gifted the Catholic Church their money and their wealth and everything else about how the world didn't end in the year 1000, they also said, well, we're not giving the money back. And that ended up bringing, you know, that ended up preventing, or it caused kind of a rift in the church and kind of started the movement towards a reformation movement in the Catholic Church. So, the end of the world thing has been going around for a long time. Let me go ahead and bring your caller on the line here. 619 area code, you're on the news. What's going on, man?
Hey, guys, it's Zach here. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, what's going on?
How is the piece?
I didn't press one. I'm just listening. I'm still, you know, delivering pizzas, so I'm just listening. I don't really have anything to say.
Okay. Well, hang out then. We'll have you. I'll go ahead and mute you again, and we'll. If you got anything to say, just say something in chat or chat room, so I can bring you back on the line. All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Awesome. You know, it's kind of actually funny when I first heard about this May 21st. Date and even the December 23rd Mayan calendar, and I immediately thought back to my early explorations into end of the world, you know, whatever you want to call it, literature. There used to be this website ages and ages ago called ZionMonastery.com, and on that you could find all of these post-apocalyptic predictions, and they did all these really crazy connections to different biblical symbolism that resembled something that I think even Zachariah Stitchens couldn't pull out of his ass. So,
well, you know, and these predictions that have cropped up in Christianity about the end of the world, this is kind of where I was going with this show, was that there's a mentality in Christianity wishing for death, basically, wishing for the end of the world. And it's not all Christians, but it seems like a good percentage of them, and I don't know, have any statistical data on this, but it seems like a good portion of them, for them it's a death cult. It's either wishing for the end of the world, the return of their God to smite all the evildoers and to right all the injustices and to raise them up to, you know, heaven or make the world a paradise again, or it's simply waiting to die while abstaining and trying not to break any rules or any taboos or anything, and then getting into heaven, getting the reward. okay? That seems to be the bulk of Christianity. And there's a segment of Christianity where it isn't about that at all. It's about, you know, living a good life, treating each other well, and, you know, with the idea being that the end could come, whether it's the end of your life or the end of the world, at any time, but you're not going to think about that. You're just going to think about doing whatever it is you need to do to live within that kind of religious perspective. But the majority, again, are more moved by fear and more moved by, you know, their own need for revenge than they are by the teachings of that particular faith. You know, it's more the negative than the positive, which is, I think when people have issues with Christianity, that's one of the big things. I'm not trying to be an apologist for Christians or what have you. I think the whole faith is bunk. But I just wanted to make sure that, first of all, when I say that it is a death cult, it's not necessarily a death cult for most or for all of them, but for most it seems to be that way.
Right on. I mean, it's obvious Jesus hates fags, man, so he's going to come back and smite them all.
Ryan, when we talk about the big JC, the one who, you know, the whole religion is basically founded upon, Jesus Christ himself biblically predicts that there would be an end of the world, that his second coming would occur. As a matter of fact, in Matthew 16:28, I'm going to quote this here. I'm not sure which biblical version this is, so your Bible may say something different if you haven't burned it already, but there shall be some standing here which shall not taste death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Now, the literal interpretation, I mean, if you're interpreting the Bible literally, he's saying basically that to his disciples, that some of his disciples would survive long enough to see his return. And based on that kind of, you know, statement, many Christians in the early church gave up everything they had, gave up their entire wealth, and started wandering the land, preaching the gospel, trying to get people to convince that the end of the world would come, and of course it never happened. Matthew 23:34, he also says, "This generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled." In other words, everything he's prophesizing would occur within a generation's time. Now, here we are, you know, 2,000-some-odd years later, before the supposed life of Christ, after the supposed life of Christ, and these predictions still have not occurred. And the Christian church, of course, wonders why there's such a lapse in faith and so much secularism in the world.
Right on. Well, I'm actually kind of cracking up right now at apologistic platform that's kind of being built up in the chat room about this statement that we're making about it being a death cult, man. I mean, let's look at the overall concept of the whole deal. And I think you already covered this once, but maybe we didn't define this out well enough. You have to spend this entire life in a kind of a state of forsaking. In other words, you have to put away anything that could be pleasurable because it might be something that angers your God, and you do this so that you get this magical chance when you die to, quote-unquote, go to a better place. Well, you know, that of course, means that you're beckoning for death because you want to go to that better place. So it's kind of what you were saying, Jason, but you just didn't, go that little extra step there and basically say because they want to go to a better place.
Right. Yeah, instead of living out life, the life they've been given, the only life that they can have any certainty of to the fullest, instead of, you know, enjoying what they have here in the here and now, like I said, they're avoiding all kinds of taboos. They're trying to follow every kind of prescription, basically, to make sure that, you know, when they get into heaven, and what do you get when you get there? You know, are any of the earthly pleasures that you could indulge in now going to be available in heaven? You know, it's all ambiguous. At least with Islam, you're told what you're getting. You're getting 72 virgins. Now, whether these virgins are male, female, or something in between, you don't really get into that. Although there's some, you know, discussion in Islam about how since women don't basically get into paradise, that they're somewhere below cattle, basically, as far as the evolution of species or whatever, or the ranking of species, so that these 72 virgins aren't necessarily female. But still, you know what you're going to be, I mean, that paradise apparently for an Islamic male is, you know, fucking for eternity these 72 virgin things, whatever they happen to be.
Hermaphrodites, obviously. They got to have both parts.
Yeah, it's something, man. I don't know. I don't know if I'd be down, you know.
I'm just going to kind of step out of context here for a minute and talk about my experience back in the Yahoo chat room days, where I came to realize that most Muslim men don't care if it's male or female. They just want to see something's wet hole.
Well, I think, you know what, for that particular group of people, especially when you look at the third world, where so little is available to those particular, you know, those people. You know, there's so little opportunity, so little potential in many ways, that the idea of when you die, you're gonna have not one, but 72 different intelligent creatures to basically tell what to do and have them do your bidding. That seems like a huge thing. So, yeah, but I agree. Yeah, it's probably just any fucking thing, you know, especially if you go, you know, if you go your short life without doing any of that kind of shit because you're trying to get into that in paradise in the first place, well then, yeah, in paradise, you're going to fuck anything that moves.
What's kind of interesting to me about the whole idea here, man, is I'm one who believes in what you might call common sense wisdoms. You know, like the expression Benjamin Franklin had, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, that becomes obvious if you still have that penny at the end of the day, then, well, you earn that penny, you know, and it's still there. Well,
right.
The immediate wisdom that comes to mind for me is waste not, want not, and yet they seem so willing to waste away what they're sure they have in speculation of something that may be coming.
Right. Splitting away the only thing that they have that is of real value, their time.
Which, right.
You know, exactly. It's instead of, and it's not talking about, you know, necessarily a hedonist lifestyle while you're alive, but, you know, just doing whatever it is that you do to progress, to develop, to make your mark, to, you know, to make the most out of the life you have. Ayn Rand, the author of Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead, and the founder of Objectivism, she was asked about death during some interview, I think, and she had mentioned that she was affected by a Greek philosopher who made the statement basically that it's not that this person was going to die. That this philosopher said, "I will not die. It's the world that will come to an end." So with the understanding that as far as he was concerned, the world would end when he died. There would be nothing left anyways. So, you know, death wasn't a concern for him. It was doing whatever, you know, he needed to do in this life before his world came to an end.
Right on.
So, continuing on with kind of some of this stuff, I wanted to talk more about this has been, the end of the world predictions have been, you know, a part of Christianity since the very beginning. As I mentioned, you know, Jesus Christ, you quoted in Matthew a couple of times, mentioned that the world would end, and he predicted that it would end before the life of his disciples had ended. Now, Paul, either of the Beatles or the Apostle Paul, also made a similar prediction in 60 CE. St. Clement, and I'm reading through these predictions real quick because there are a whole bunch of people who do this. And in the year 90, there was a saint who made a prediction. In the second century, the Montavist movement predicted the end of the world. There was a point in, I'm looking for it here real quick, in 968, there was an eclipse, and the German Emperor Otto and his army predicted that this was a sign of the end of the world. So eclipses apparently can, you know, you got this religion that claims not to be based on superstition. Okay, that has a religion but not superstition. But you know, the sun blinks out for a little bit. There's an eclipse and they're predicting the end of the world. There were in 992, Good Friday happened to coincide with the Feast of Annunciation, and in Germany they were saying that on this year they witnessed three suns and three moons in the sky battling it out for which one would be the dominant spheres. That this was hearkening the end of the world. 992. I mentioned already the year 1000 with the church and how they were all saying wouldn't give the money back. Look for here in 1669, there was a movement in Russia. The old belief movement. 20,000 people in Russia burned themselves to death, self-immolation, trying to protect themselves from the devil because they thought it was the end of the world, 1669. And that kind of blows my mind there, these different cults, these different segments of Christianity where when they think the end of the world's coming, well, they go ahead and fulfill it for themselves, basically. The end of the world's coming anyway, so they kill themselves, whether they, you know, dig themselves into a mine and starve to death or, you know, whatever it is. That for them, the end of the world happened, when for the rest of us, of course, the second coming never occurs.
Of course. Of course. My theory is the world already ended, and we just, we have no idea. Everybody left on this planet is, I don't know, worthless losers, and this is hell, at least in terms of how that good book describes it. I know there's not a day I go outside and don't sweat to the point of torture, so.
And, you know, that's funny that the Jehovah's Witnesses share in that viewpoint, at least some of them, that the second coming has already occurred, that the world has already been either perfected, and this is it, this is as good as paradise gets, or this is hell, and we're being tested to go to another world, another kind of paradise, but that the second coming has already occurred. It's funny, the Watchtower Organization and the Jehovah's Witnesses have actually been predicting the end of the world since 1914. They predicted 1915, 1918, 1920, 1925, 1941, 1975, and as recently as 1994, that those folks were thinking that the end of the world would occur. And Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormons, he predicted the end of the world would occur in 1890. Charles Wesley, founder of the Methodists, predicted it would happen in 1794. So, you know, there's even the heavy hitters, basically, as far as Christian sects and everything else, have stepped up and said that these really, you know, the world would come to an end. And I guess, you know what, if Jesus Christ is wrong about it, well, then, you know, these guys aren't going to get it right either.
Right on. But, I mean, if anybody's going to get it right, it's got to be Nostradamus, right? I mean, he's the dude who knows it all.
Well, Nostradamus, you know, a lot of his predictions you could take one way or another. You know, that I think that, and Nostradamus is one of the best or the top on the list of the slick prophets, basically. Where your predictions are kind of ambiguous, they can be interpreted one way or another, and you throw out enough predictions, you throw out enough shit that you contradict yourself, so that you cover both your bases. It's like predicting on, you know, on the East Coast that the Republicans are going to win the presidency, and going to the West Coast predicting that the Democrats are going to win the election, and then when the election occurs, you just crow about how you were right wherever you're at on the West Coast or the East Coast. And then you let the folks in the East, if it's, let's say it's the West Coast, the Democrats win. Well, then you let the folks in the West Coast go, oh, this guy's a genius. He's a prophet and everything else. He predicted the president, you know, who's going to be elected. And they tell the people on the East Coast that bring it up, hey, he predicted that the other guy went over here. Well, they tell him that they say that those guys are wrong. So, Nostradamus, just funny. And the Bible's that way. You know, there's something there for everyone. Every little fucking thing that you want to make it into something else. Any interpretation is available to you, and you could, you know, you could come up with whatever based on and find biblical reason for whatever it is you're doing.
Right. You know, I kind of almost feel bad goofing on this because my grandparents are sold on this. They're sold on the rapture thing. They're sold on the end of the world coming. Matter of fact, I think about 6 or 7 years ago for my birthday, my grandfather got me a book that was all about the rapture and how to prepare for it. It was quite an amusing read, I've got to say.
Well, you know what? In preparing for the rapture, the only ones that can actually prepare for the rapture are the ones who aren't taken away. You know, the ones who are left behind, you know, the free cars, the moving into a better, you know, better place, you know, stuff like that, because, you know, the people that are gone, well, they're gone, man. What do you do? What do you prepare for that? The people that are here, you know, just hope you're not on that airplane when that that pilot, who is a Christian, gets raptured or whatever. And this Harold Camping dude, he predicted that 3% of the population was going to, you know, be taken up by the rapture on May 21st. And my thoughts on this, along with some of his other math, was kind of shaky. 3% of the population probably goes missing on a daily basis, okay? So who's going to notice when 3% of the population disappears?
And nobody that I can know of, maybe the Mexicans.
Right. Somebody goes missing, and you're just going to go, you know what, you got to wait 24 hours, you file your police report. If there were a spike of police reports for missing peoples on that particular day, then maybe you could actually say something. And, you know what, as far as this camping dude's concerned, maybe the rapture did occur, and he just wasn't on the list.
Yeah, well, that's possible. Most preacher men do have a penchant for little boys. So.
Right. Yeah, they got some dark shit they're trying to make up for, which is why they get into the preacher business in the first place.
Right on.
Now, I, you know, the thing that I find kind of, you know, just ridiculous, again, is these people on this particular huckster has, you know, stripped people of so much of their wealth. So many people invested in this idea. There's some dude in New York that just gave up everything, that sold everything he had, put all of his money into this whole, you know, campaign. And I guess a lot of the billboards that you would see predicting the end of the world, a lot of that was from his money, from him being involved in this whole process. And there they were. I think they were with him at Times Square when this is all supposed to go down. And he just was kind of confused. I mean, just kind of blinking. I mean, to believe in that idea so much that, you know, you're shocked when it didn't happen. And then he continues to believe. That's the other thing that blows my mind. I mean, this guy, this Harold Camping dude, like I said, he struck out 3 times already, okay? And people are still buying into it, and they're still hoping for the end of the world. Now, how bad does your life have to suck for you to wish for the end of the world?
Well, I'm reminded of Waco. I mean, wasn't that the whole reason for the Waco bunker or stockade or whatever you want to call it, was they were preparing for the end of the world?
All right. David Koresh had a doomsday, but they're a branch of Christianity. They're based, their religion, their philosophy is based on Christianity, based on Christian text, and they thought that the end of the world was coming. And of course, then with that group, when the ATF folks did arrive and started, you know, cracking down on them, I think that's something they told their followers, that this is the end of the world, this is the end. And I think they're preparing for, you know, going out and dying. So much like what Rand was saying, as far as they're concerned, the end of the world was occurring because they were going to get killed. The Jonestown cult, when the crackdown started to occur in Jonestown, that's when it was, okay, time to end the world, pass out the Kool-Aid, it's time, the world has come to an end.
Right. Well, what I'd like to know, because there seems to be a common theme running around all these religious zealots and nuts, man. They seem to either be hell-bent on some kind of jihad, looking for some kind of rapture or Armageddon to happen. I don't get it. I mean, what's so wrong with just making the best of the world that we live in? You know, how about, you know, working with what we got instead of, preparing for our occupation of Planet 23 in the 16th cosmos, you know?
Well, yeah, it's just, that's what doesn't make sense to me. And that's, And that seems to be, even in Christian texts, that seems to be, and most religions, there's that root idea that it shouldn't matter when the world's coming to an end. It shouldn't matter what, you know, what reward you get in the next life or whatever. None of that should matter. What should matter is what you're doing in this world to make things better for yourself, make things better for your fellow man, you know, whatever your particular your motivations are. And I'm one of those people that sits there that think, at least in my mind, if you make things better for yourself, you are by default making things better for those people around you. Because even if you're not being in charity, even if you're not going out doing good works, by making sure you're one less person that anybody else has to take care of, you make it easier for everybody else.
Right on. Well, if anybody's interested, I actually have several tips for how to deal with the end of the world. Like, if the end of the world comes, I have several solid tips to give you. The first thing is, when you see what appears to be abandoned clothing and vehicles that have just, like, stopped in the middle of the street, and they have abandoned clothing in them and stuff, that's a pretty good sign that, the rapture, it has come. The next thing that you need to make sure you do after that is go get yourself plenty of ammunition and plenty of guns, because, well, human nature is that if it looks like, some big kind of catastrophe happened, they're immediately going for the looting, first thing. So, get armed, because looting, raping, murdering, buildings and cities being burnt down, that's all coming.
On that point, real quick, it's a pretty sad statement that if the shit hits the fan, if the end of the world were to occur and there are people left behind, one of the first things you need to do is protect yourself against other people. It's a pretty sad statement on our human condition.
Yeah, it is. But, it's very similar to the type of rules that you might attach to, zombie holocaust, any Armageddon-style thing. The other thing that you want to definitely do is make sure that you head towards seclusion in the mountains or deep in the Everglades or, somewhere along those lines, a place where not a lot of people are going to venture to try to go, and, you won't have to deal with a lot of bullshit.
Right on. Exactly. Get away from other people. If the shit hits the fan, and that's something I wanted to kind of talk about since we're kind of in the second half of the show. We wanted to, the first half of the show we kind of dedicated towards the whole Harold Camping thing and the weird mentality of in Christianity that's wishing for death. The second half of the show I kind of wanted to talk about some actual scenarios. Where, if not the end of the world, some pretty heavy shit goes down, and it's close to fucking up. And the one thing I wanted to bring up right off the bat was this prediction of a major solar storm in this year, next year, or in 2013. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't, actually. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let me kick it off with... looking at the National Geographic website right now, and I'm looking for the year here, 1859, there was a solar storm. And the solar storm is when the sun goes through cycles, just like any other, energy-generating body, basically. It's cyclical. And sometimes the output is low, and sometimes the output is high. And solar flares from the sun will actually reach out beyond the Earth's orbit. And these solar flares, generally, it's extra energy that hits the Earth's atmosphere. We're protected by, our atmosphere and our magnetic, what have you, which causes the aurora borealis, the northern lights. It's part of the solar energy hitting the Earth's magnetic field.
Right.
We've been monitoring sunspots for years. And sunspots basically are, solar flares or something of that nature. And we've noticed that the frequency of sunspots has been on the decline lately. So the sun is building up basically through to a point where there's going to be a major output of solar radiation, solar energy. In 1859, there was a major solar storm. It was the first thing that was the first time it ever occurred that we could record the event, because before then we wouldn't really have noticed that there was a solar storm going on because we didn't have any technology or anything that could be affected by this. But in 1859, what we had were telegraph systems. We had these wires all over the place, wiring everything together to communicate back and forth by telegraph. The level of solar energy passing through our atmosphere was so high that this telegraph system basically got shut down. The wires were sparking up. The telegraph devices actually set some of these offices on fire, things like that. Okay, so this huge amount of energy affected these copper wires and everything else, and caused everything to get kind of loopy. Okay, we recently had some solar flares within the last decade or so that have caused power outages in Quebec and in looking for the other place here, Finland and stuff like that, northern hemisphere places. And these were mild solar flare outbursts, a little bit heavier than normal, but a little bit lighter than what they saw in 1859.
Right on.
What they're predicting that will occur here in the next 3 years is a major solar burst. And the way this will affect us is because we're so involved or so wrapped into our electronics and our way of communicating and everything else that this solar burst is going to shut down radio communication. It's going to disrupt electrical grids. Like in 1859, the northern lights, you could see the northern lights as far south as Cuba. And in places like Indiana and the northern United States, you could actually read newspapers at night by the light of these northern lights. So that much energy is going to be hitting our internet, hitting our communication networks and everything else. GPS is going to go to shit. The internet's going to go to shit. Your radio communication is going to be shot. You're going to have blackouts over the place. And these blackouts, because of this solar radiation, it's not that they'll be able to, it's not that the power grid will be overloaded and then you'll be able to flip a switch or flip a circuit breaker and get your lights back on or whatever. They have to wait for this shit to pass before they can do that.
Right.
Okay? So you could have power outages that last for months. Okay? If it could be bad enough even that any car that is less than 20 years old, because of the electrical systems that are in these cars will be shut down. So the day that it occurs, the day that the solar flare occurs and everything else, you'd be on the highway, and all of a sudden your car, your 2008, 2009, 2010 car, just comes to a rolling stop, and you can't start it back up again because of the amount of solar radiation going on. And it'll be the exact thing that you're talking about right now. It'll be that, okay, you're on the highway, all of a sudden your 20 or 30-mile commute back and forth to work that only takes you about 15 minutes is now going to take you a good part of the day, especially where we live where it's hotter than fuck. Okay. And you're going to be dealing with all these other assholes who are on the highway who realize that a parking lot from here to the nearest police station, and they can do whatever the fuck they want because a cop can't get to them.
Right.
So yeah, it could be it could get real ugly real quick here if this more scientific prediction actually comes to pass.
Right on. Now. This is the thing that kills me here, man, is I'm scratching my head, and I can just hear people calling bullshit on this whole idea, but the fact that there's any kind of back to it at all just makes me wonder, when we're sitting here having conversations about the end of the world and shit like that, well, the obvious solution in my mind to the end of the world is not to be on the same world that's going to end when it's time. So...
Right on.
I don't quite get it. I mean, why there aren't more people moving into the field of astrophysics or whatever it has to do with the actual space programs that are out there, why we don't actually have more of a budget dedicated to that is beyond me.
And that's something that we've brought up on this show a number of times. It's one of our favorite things to talk about. Stephen Hawking's predicting that, it's a mathematical certainty that eventually some big chunk of something is going to hit our little rock and it's going to fuck up civilization. If it doesn't wipe us out, it's going to make things really hard for us again for a few centuries. And the only way to protect yourself from that is to be on more than one rock at a time, to have the species spread out to other planets, other places. And I think what we've talked about also is that it's going to take, you know, corporations, basically. It's going to take the free market to decide, you know what, there's a dollar to be made by going out in space. And that's working. We're not, obviously, the government basically shot its load back in 1969 going to the moon or whatever. And that's as far as we're interested in going. That it's not fiscally, you know, feasible for our government, at least with, you know, the current way things are going, for us to go out into space. And we haven't reached that population cap yet where we're so overcrowded where, you know, living on the moon sounds like a good idea. But when these corporations step up and go, you know what, there's a dollar to be made on Mars, that's when you're going to start seeing people moving to Mars, to these other, you know, these other habitable spaces in our own solar system. It takes people like you and I and our listeners or whatever being aware of the need for this and encouraging it. You know, basically, when you've got these companies that are investing in space exploration, they're considering taking these first steps as a star-faring species to other planets, that, you know, we support them with our dollars. We purchase their products. We pay attention to their innovations, to their technologies they're developing, to what they've got going on, so that they continue to feel that the market is interested.
Right. Well, that's only one way to really go about it, too. Another way, I mean, like, I don't know how it is throughout the rest of the world, but I'm assuming it's probably pretty close to similar to what goes on here in Florida. There is a section of people that are deemed rednecks here, but they speak more for the people who just don't really have the mental know-how to do much other than manual labor. They also seem to be favored by the Grays. We've talked about this many times, but what I don't get is why they don't, like, okay, we know the Grays come here to grab people. Why they don't ambush these fucking Grays and steal their spaceships?
There you go. We're waiting. Bubba J was ass raped by one of those aliens last weekend. He keeps showing up every month and everything. So when Bubba J gets taken this time, we're going to be waiting. We're going to get ourselves a rocket ship. Yeah.
It just makes sense to me, man. I mean, come on. We can't be the only geniuses in the world that are thinking about getting off this fucking planet.
No, man. I mean, man. It would be, if anybody, thinking about how, fuck it, you find your way out to Mars and everything or whatever, and you're the first person there, and you just claim the entire damn planet in the name of Steve Downey. This is my place now.
That's right, bitch.
You've got legal precedent. It's your place, you know?
Right on, man. That's what I'm saying. And what gets me, man, is there's guys like Bill Gates, who's supposedly so smart. Why haven't they started trying to terraform any of these fuckers?
Yeah, or something. Or, yeah, go off to the moon and establish, you know, just have a, you know, you go off to the moon and you put up a great big fucking sign. What was that movie? Hancock.
Yeah.
Hancock goes up to the moon and puts that logo on it. You know, when's Microsoft going to do that shit? When's somebody going to do, you know? And maybe, you know, with that, though, they might try to find some terrestrial way to do it. Instead of actually going to the moon and putting a great big sign that you can see whenever it's full, just have some massive projector, you know, some ground-based projector or whatever, that projects an image on the moon. That'd be the cheap way to get around that and everything else. But it should be a matter of, you have to find some dollars and cents reason to go to fucking Mars, to go to wherever. You know, I think when you send something out there and it finds gold or it finds fucking diamonds or something on Mars, that's when all of a sudden people will be hot to get to Mars.
Right on. Well, I mean, I don't know about you, dude, but I'm thinking, you know, Mars real estate already has a high market value on it. I mean, Christ, it's Mars, you know? And can you imagine, you know, Buffy and whatever, Poofy are at the local hobnob thing, and they're like, "Well, I just bought prime real estate on the crust of Mars is whatever great frozen river."
Well, you know what this gets me thinking about. Okay, maybe another angle to pushing people into outer space. Right now, you know, we're sitting around the United States. There are certain laws. There are certain restrictions to our behavior that we just can't get around. Okay, there's legal and illegal substances. There's illegal substances that I'm not allowed to imbibe. There's things that I'm not allowed to do. That given my will, given my interest, I might otherwise engage in certain activities. Okay. There's got to be right now in international waters, all right, ships, places, you know, huge boats, where if you got the connections and got the money, you can go out to these boats and whatever the fuck you want to do goes. They make it happen. Okay? It's got to be a reality in international waters where there's no laws other than whatever laws the captain of the boat says are going to be going down. Okay? Maritime law or whatever. All
right?
As
right
that shit gets cracked down on, how long will it be before you've got these space junkets where you go to the moon, you go to Mars or whatever, and not only is it low gravity, not only is it a different environment, but they build these amusement parks for the ridiculously wealthy. You know, low gravity roller coasters, crazy ass bars where every fucking psychotropic substance you could imagine is available for you there to imbibe in, you know, ridiculously overpriced prostitutes, every fucking thing, where you paid a ridiculous amount of money for her, so if she doesn't come back, well, we understand. That kind of shit. That would be, there you go, there's a reason to go to Mars if you've got that kind of money. And then, of course, they need people to work there, you know, need people to work in this place. So yeah, just to get away from the terrestrial laws we have would be a reason to go to outer space.
There we go. I mean, right there. You've seen the movie Hostel. Now imagine if it was on a whole different planet. How far out the window of your Mars house can you push somebody's head before it implodes? You know, those are the kind of things I think somebody would be thinking about.
Right. You've got somebody. Yeah, step into this room right here. This is just no. Yeah, it says airlock on it. Don't worry about that. All right, sit tight.
Splat.
Run, bitch, run. The total recall.
Yeah, total recall.
The iconic thing, total recall.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. That's awesome. Too funny.
So here's people worried about some bullshit end of the world scenario. There's a whole religion founded on the idea. I mean, think about it. Christianity is founded on the principle not of the teachings of some dude where it's love your neighbor and everything else, not on any good works or anything like that. It's the you do what you're fucking told, or you're going to get your ass spanked. But if you do what you're told, you get to go to this little resort in the sky, basically, and that's where you get to spend eternity.
Right, and you don't get any genitals up there. I know that. I forget what the actual passage of it is, but you know, heavenly bodies don't have any kind of sexual organs. So, I mean,
right. Yeah, your divine body. You don't have an urge to sex. Fuck that.
Yeah, that's it.
that's what makes it all worthwhile.
Right on, man. That's it's always been amazing to me with these religions like this that everything that seems inanely human, they're opposed to.
Right. Any carnality is in opposition, and that's something that I mentioned in your. I think I mentioned in my response to your blog was that, or I don't know, maybe I think it was maybe. But anyways, maybe that you've got a group of people that it's either divine or it's carnal. That the goal is either to be completely carnal, completely animalistic, or it is to be divine, completely spiritual, completely separated from your carnal desires. Where it seems to me that humanity, the actual state of being a human being, lies in a mastery of both. a complete and, you know, unabashed fulfillment of your carnal desires, as well as a spiritual and divine, you know, way of living, mentality, thinking, agenda, whatever it is. So that, you know, humanity lies somewhere actually in the middle and is something more than either animal or divine.
Yeah, yeah, but less than either as well. It's both. The thing of it is that we are what we are, and once we start, once we start actually, you know, taking account for what we are and start really owning the skin instead of constantly hoping to become something we're not, you know, like wishing on the great old ones to break open universe B and come down with this army of fucking, deep ones to eat everyone all up. I mean, that just shows that you have a ridiculously terrible time getting laid.
Well, it's, yeah. Somebody in the chat room just asked, can you have divine carnality? Well, absolutely you can have divine carnality. There are many Eastern religious practices and philosophies that engage in divine carnality and tantra and things like that. And then Daryl mentions that we're interested in maintaining man in the state we are in now and not allowing it to change while we're talking about the expansion of man to other worlds. I think Daryl must have not been reading our blogs or anything. We're both pretty heavy about the evolution of man, the development of man. And we're talking about man being in a position now where there's nothing really holding us back but our will into going out to these other worlds. And man needs to continue to develop, but we are pushing for that. We definitely push an agenda of self-development and development of the species, which is how we've kind of gone off into this tangent of man being somewhere between animal and divine. So I don't know where Daryl's coming from with the whole... We don't talk about man evolving. TC, would you have gotten that from our interactions, even tonight, that we're not interested in the evolution of man?
No, not at all. I wouldn't have, but I mean, Daryl, love him to death, but his ears are tuned a certain way.
Oh, I see. What it is Daryl's afraid of his dick. But you're not willing to abandon the carnal, is what he says in the chat room. So Daryl's afraid of the nasty things that he wants to do with his body. So Daryl will always be stunted by his physical limitations. So it's not us that are limited. It's not us that don't want to see about expanding and whatever. We embrace our humanity and want to see that develop, and that includes the carnal. That includes all of it. Daryl, if you want to be afraid of your dick and not embrace that carnality and seek some sort of spirituality through the carnal, that's on you, dude. You're free to do whatever you want. I'm all about individualism.
Right on.
So.
I almost feel bad, but I know he's got thick skin, so it's cool.
Oh, he's getting all shitty in the chat room now because, you know, we can't be funny either, apparently.
He does take things seriously, man, so you kind of have to be careful with that, but I know he can laugh about himself, so... it's funny.
Yeah. Well, we got about 6 minutes remaining. I guess, you know what, since we brought up the blog, since we were talking about that, that's kind of the direction we started the show in. You and I, we both write several blogs that if folks like Daryl want to check things out and see what our positions are about the evolution of man and things like that, you go to... the www.colleprime. Is it the www dot thing in there? I can go to this real quick.
Yeah, offhand, I don't know that it necessarily is in there, but...
Yeah, I don't think so. Let me take a look here. We have blogs where we write about different things, and we've really kind of gotten heavy into this since our Cult of Cthulhu days, where we, you know, certain ideas were given voice, and then when we found out that those ideas weren't being embraced by the management the way we thought they were, well, we got the hell out of there, and now we kind of just, you know, rip on these things on our own. And I'm just pulling up my blog page right now.
Right on.
Hang on a minute. But anyways, go ahead.
That's fine. In the meantime, I guess, I'll make sure that all our listeners know that most of this ribbing at Daryl is just out of good fun. And I'm sure he's not afraid of his dick. He probably touches it all the time.
All right. Yeah, there's a link to it. CreativeBodyStudios.blogspot.com is one of the blogs where I talk about artwork. So that's not necessarily where you wanted to go, but go ahead and check that out. You can check out the Crawling Chaos blog. That's crawlingchaoscoc.blogspot.com. I may maybe change the name to that real quick. But the Crawling Chaos blog is where I kind of talk about spirituality and the occult and different ideas about philosophy. And my most recent post happens to be about TC's blog, Kali Prime. So if you check out the Calling Chaos blog, you'll find a link to Kali Prime, and you'll find the introductory blog on Kali Prime. And like TC said, it's just kind of starting out, but that's something to check out. I have another blog. I actually have a few blogs. So there's Calling Chaos. There's the Creative Eye Studios blog. There's the What the Hell Was I Thinking blog, which is jasonwhatthehell.blogspot.com. And that's where I talk about politics and social issues. My most recent blog post is where I announced my endorsement of Herman Cain as president candidate for 2012 and give my reasons for that. So check that out. I'm a fiscal conservative, and I agree with what's going on there with Herman Cain. And then the other blog that is worth looking into is Distorted Brainwaves, which is Jason's distortedbrainwave.blogspot.com. And that's where I talk about just my experiences being a tattoo artist and shit like that. So four different directions for you to go into if you want to check things out. But the Crawling Chaos COC blog is where I kind of get into my expressions of human development and the overall development itself. How much time do we got left? 2 minutes remaining.
I wanted to kind of throw this out there. For anybody who wants to kind of find a centralized place to, see what's new on any of those blogs, you can actually go to the front page of fearthebeast.com, and I've got a live RSS feed running for all the blog projects that you have going, so they can just pop on there and see if anything new comes up. And I really want to actually, if I can, point them in the direction of reading that blog on knowledge that you just put up yesterday. I think that it's fabulous. It's absolutely probably one of the most relevant things that I've read in a long time. So,
right on, thanks. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we got 2 minutes left remaining. There was one thing I wanted to, and Daryl's in the chat room. He's talking about some things. Daryl has an agenda, and I talked to Daryl on in Sin, in the Sin Tiny Chat and everything else. And yeah, I think Daryl's a good guy. He's got a good head on him and everything else. But I think he has a particular set of beliefs that kind of like this thing here, where we talk about embracing both the carnal and the divine. And he just doesn't see that as an option. I can't understand it, but I can understand why he wouldn't see that as an option, embracing both the carnal and the divine to develop. That development doesn't have to necessarily go in one particular direction. As a matter of fact, it's good that development goes in as many different directions as possible, so that every avenue is explored. And then you pull the best things from those different avenues of exploration. So that is where I think human development goes. If we limit ourselves to one channel or two channels or what have you, one different direction or two, we're going to find ourselves running into dead ends, and then we won't have a way back out of it, because we're talking about the evolution of self, the evolution of the species. We'll just run ourselves into the ground. So I guess, our thing is the mankind or human beings as a total package when we talk about self-development.
Right on. Well, I mean, we're down to like the last 45 seconds, so anything left, dude?
I got nothing left. I might be putting some new artwork up tomorrow night or tomorrow during the day. I got a new piece I need to finish up and everything else, but nothing else is going on, really. I see that on Sin. The promo video is about the artwork that I had for sale that was going to be, the funds were going to be donated to Sin, or a portion of the funds are going to be donated to Sin. So some of that artwork is still available. So if anybody's interested in helping, support Sin and getting some cool artwork, check out that video and get a hold of me and find out what's still available.
Rock on.
All right, we're out.
We're out.
Later.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?